Thanks for inviting me into your home, your long-haul truck, RV, camper, taxi, your parents' well-appointed basement with the simulated wood paneling, electric fireplace, and the painting of dogs playing poker, your loft, that greasy spoon just off the interstate, and your cabin in the woods. Welcome to Coast to Coast AM, the very best in late-night talk radio. I'm Richard Serrett, and tonight, this morning, I'm coming to you live from Old Thornhill Village, just north of Toronto. Yesterday, of course, marked the 20th anniversary of what many have referred to as our generation's Pearl Harbor. Now, I know I'm a day late, but I could not talk about 9/11 tonight. Like many of you, I remember exactly where I was and exactly what I was doing when the cascading chain of horrifying events began around 9 a.m. Eastern on September 11, 2001. And within 3 hours, New York's tallest buildings were reduced to rubble, and the Pentagon, the nerve center of the American armed forces, was burning and partially collapsed. Nearly 3,000 civilians lost their lives, and more than 6,000 people were seriously injured, and the entire continent was in collective shock, still trying to make sense of how a supposed coordinated act of terrorism of that magnitude was allowed to take place on American soil. In the 20 years since 9/11, the events that occurred that morning have been analyzed in depth from 1,000 different perspectives. Tonight, this morning, we're going to examine the events from 3. In the first hour, Dr. Judy Wood, a former professor of mechanical engineering and the author of Where Did the Towers Go?, explains why she's concluded that the physical evidence indicates the Twin Towers on 9/11 fell due to directed free energy technology. How else, Dr. Wood argues, could over 1 million tons of building material be turned into dust? In hour two, investigative researcher S.K. Bain explains not the how, but the who and the why. In his book, The Most Dangerous Book in the World, I'm not editorializing, that's the title, The Most Dangerous Book in the World, 9/11 as Mass Ritual, Bain argues forcefully that the framework for the entire event was a psychological warfare campaign built upon a deadly foundation of black magic and high technology. His book details a view of the sinister nature of the defining event of the 21st century and opens a window into the vast scope of the machinery of oppression that the author asserts has been constructed around us. In hours 3 and 4, David Chandler has a Bachelor of Science in Physics and a Master's in Mathematics. He offers a scientific understanding of the seemingly inexplicable collapse of World Trade Center Building 7, a crash course, if you will, in the implications of free fall. Welcome to the Audio Imaginarium. Come on in, weary traveler, hang your cloak on a peg, grab a stool, and come gather round the fire. There are stories to be told, and you are among friends. I'm Richard Serrett, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Why don't you stay a while? Dr. Judy Wood is a former professor of mechanical engineering with research interests in experimental stress analysis, structural mechanics, optical methods, deformation analysis, and the materials characterization of biomaterials and composite materials. She's a member of the Society for Experimental Mechanics, co-founded SEM's Biological Systems and Materials Division, and has served on the SEM Composite Materials Technical Division. Dr. Wood started to question the events of 9/11 on that same day when she saw and heard on television was contradictory and appeared to violate the laws of physics. Since that day, she's used her knowledge of engineering mechanics to prove that the collapse of the World Trade Center Twin Towers could not have happened as the American public was told, and she is the author of Where Did the Towers Go? Evidence of Directed Free Energy Technology on 9/11. Dr. Wood, welcome back. It's been a while. How are you?
Hi, thanks. I'd like to make one correction from what you said earlier, what I'm going to talk about. Let me read the last paragraph of the preface of my book. It says, "So let us consider the body of empirical evidence that must be explained in order to determine what happened. What is presented here is not a theory. It is not speculation. It is evidence. Here, then, is the evidence of what happened on 9/11.
All right, fair enough. Did I call it a theory?
Oh, no, you said it was how. You have to first determine what happened before you can say how it happened, who did it, why it was done, and so forth. And
right. Well, so but by the how, I guess I was referring to the mechanics and exactly, yeah, what happened.
Yeah,
and,
yeah,
and...
but it is so important to stress that you can't solve a problem until you know what problem you're solving. So you have to first define what happened. And why that's so important is if you're going to run a cover-up, you get people to argue about the how. And in order to argue about the how, they have to skip over the what. So they assume the what. So they're solving an imagined problem. So that's
fair
why
enough.
It's so important.
All right, so let's talk about the what. But first, let's talk about what you say didn't happen or what you prove didn't happen. You say the WTC buildings were not destroyed by heat generated from burning jet fuel. They were not destroyed by mini-nuclear weaponry. We've heard all of these theories. They were not destroyed by conventional explosives. They were not destroyed by welding material such as thermite, thermate, or nanothermite.
Right.
You say they were dustified. What is dustification? What does that mean?
Well, it's what happened. And when I'm looking at something, a phenomenon, if I don't know what it is, I don't label it with something with a known definition. Like, for example, fumes, you don't call it smoke because that already implies it's caused by fire. So you're assuming fire is the cause. So it's important to not let those subconscious assumptions go into place. So I call it dustification. You know, it wasn't a word until then, but it's no question what it means. That the building was turning to dust. Some mechanism caused it to turn to dust. So dustification.
Right. And I've seen videos, and you've pointed these out to me, where you will see, for example, a steel girder coming down, falling down. And as it's coming down in slow motion, you can see almost as if it's a tablet of Alka-Seltzer dissolving in a glass of water.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what first caught your eye when you were watching this on TV?
Yes, I've never seen anything like that before. It was like all of the atoms, instead of being attracted to each other, suddenly repel each other. And it sort of looked like a steam explosion, but out of solid material. And that was weird. But then also, as something's falling, just frothing up into dust, and you look at where it was supposed to land on the ground, and there's just unburned paper and dust.
Right, right. One of the things I thought was unusual is I'm trying to imagine in a 110-story building, how many toilets would be in that building, or filing cabinets, or, I don't know, telephones. And when I saw all of those images of what was left, I didn't see toilets. I mean, I don't know if you can...
There's only one file cabinet, and that was from Ben and Jerry's ice cream, and it was underground. And
right.
They had cash in the file cabinet, and it didn't burn, and so they were able to call up Ben and Jerry and say, hey, come get your cash.
Right, right. So one has to, you know, wonder, how did all of those toilets, all of those filing cabinets simply just disappear? You don't see any of them in the rubble. We're talking about over 1 million tons of building material here, right?
Yes, each tower is a little over a quarter mile tall. It was 500,000 tons each.
So let's talk about some of the other, I want to talk about some of the other effects that you've talked about. But before
well,
we
I
do that,
some, let photos prepared, but at the last minute, I guess they weren't going to get posted.
I believe they posted a link. They posted a link to the site where those photos are.
The pictures, the specific pictures I was going to talk about, you know, there's a list of them, and if I'd known earlier, I could have made a page with them on it. But anyway,
I just wanted to ask you about the dust for one more question regarding the dust specifically.
Okay.
Judy, if you were able to gather up some of the dust at the, you know, just after 9/11, would there be markers in there? Would there be something that would jump out at you if you were to analyze the dust to say, aha, This is a marker.
There's some of it that was, and it was some of the dust was less than 1/100th of the size of red blood cells.
Less than 1/100th the size of blood, and why is that unusual?
It's so small. It's getting down to the atomic size. It's not chunks. If a building falls down, or if it's blown apart with controlled demolition, or something like that, you get chunks. You don't get nano-sized dust.
All right. So some of the other effects that you noticed.
If it comes down in dust, it doesn't make a thud when it hits. The equivalent seismic signal was significantly less than it should have been. These buildings, these two towers, had more than 30 times the potential energy of the Seattle King Dome. But when that was taken down with controlled demolition, it was the same. It was 2.3, and the North Tower made it 2.3, and the South Tower made it 2.1. Less than the Seattle King Dome, and it's like 30 times the potential energy. And Building 7 was 6 times the potential energy, but it made a 0.6 equivalent on the Richter scale, which is like a jackhammer. So, it didn't slam to the ground. Also, the ground shook for less than 8 seconds. The ground shook for less time than it would take to drop a bowling ball off the roof of a tower and have it hit the ground. That's a problem.
Okay. Talk to me about what is called the protective bathtub.
But the point is that the ground didn't shake long enough to have the building fall down.
Oh, I see. Okay, got it. All right. But
So the building went away faster than it would take it to fall, even without any of the floors in the way for the roof to fall. The only
explanation is a problem.
It turns to dust.
Okay, and just further to that point, there's something called the protective bathtub, right, that protected Manhattan from flooding.
And it wasn't destroyed.
All right.
It still held. And it was a day or two after the event when they brought in earth-moving equipment, and that began to damage the bathtub wall. That's sort of a dike that keeps the Hudson River out of the basement of the towers.
Right, right. So one would expect...
Held.
One would expect that, given the size, you would expect seismic activity when a building that large falls to the ground, that it would have ruptured or damaged the protective bathtub and the East River or the Hudson River. Excuse my ignorance of the geography. I'm not from New York, but the Hudson River would have come pouring in.
Yeah, it would have flooded all of Lower Manhattan's subway system. Didn't happen. Also, when they took down the remains of Building 6, just this little corner of Building 6, they decided they couldn't use explosives because they're afraid of damaging the bathtub wall. They used cranes and chains and, pulled it down.
Now, some of the other interesting...
Because they're afraid it would be too damaged. But there's a whole lot of other weird things going on. We've just been talking about Tower 1, 2, and Building 7, but we can count beyond 3. Other folks don't count beyond 3, but we can here. There's 7 towers with a WTC prefix. All 7 were destroyed that day. And Building 3, what remained was a smaller percentage of the initial building than the remains of Building 7 was of its original height.
So they were all dustified in the same manner. All dustified.
Yeah, gone. And if Building 2 fell on top of it, where's Building 2? And Building 6 had a big hole in it. Like half the building was gone down to ground level. You can count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. It was an 8-story building, and you can count all the way down to ground level. And the inside is just hollowed out.
The cars that you saw on the, was it FDR Drive?
They're all over the place. There's over 1,400 toasted cars. I call it toasted. They're toast. They're history.
Right.
You can't fix them. You got to get another one. So there's over 1,400 toasted cars all over Manhattan. Some are moved, but most were not moved. Like, there's a toasted car lot by the Embassy Suites Hotel. I've got photos of it before and after. You know, you see the nice shiny cars there, and then you see them toasted.
And why is that significant?
It's a weird phenomenon. Also up West Broadway. And when one of the towers went, the dust went up and blocked out all the sun. And this firefighter came out of Building 7. He said he couldn't see his hand in front of his face. Couldn't see anything. And then, thank goodness, the cars started lighting up, because then he could see where he was going.
Right, right. But when you say toasted cars,
spontaneous combustion for no reason. He wasn't getting hit with anything.
The cars appeared to go up in spontaneous combustion.
Right. It wasn't real fire. It may have turned into that, but initially it was more like a plasma type effect. And, all sorts of unburned paper up and down the street.
So these scorched cars, some of them, I believe you said, were on their roof, right? They were turned upside down?
Yeah, like they had been levitated and were upside down. They weren't necessarily toasted. Those are just upside down.
And so for those who continue to argue about controlled demolition, which is, it's almost like a religion, thermite or thermite or nanothermite, and that the buildings were wired, 110 stories, wired for a controlled demolition. You and I have talked before about this, and you mentioned one of the big problems with that is New York at that time, even though we didn't have smartphones, everyone had cell phones. Why is having a cell phone, why would that maybe argue against controlled demolition?
Well, come along the highway, you see signs that say, turn off cell phones and two-way radio, blasting zone ahead. Because it might accidentally trip it. And you can't tell everybody in southern Manhattan to turn off their cell phone, not tell why, for weeks on end. But it was a relatively quiet demise. Like Building 7, there's an interview with the EMT lady that has her back to Building 7. And the people watching, the audience there while she's being interviewed, see Building 7 dropping and gasp. And she turns around, what's happened? She has no idea what just happened behind her. In other words, there was no sound for its demise. And with controlled demolition, you hear bang, 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 and then you start seeing the building begin to move here and there. It's also not simultaneous. It's very timed and has to be very carefully calculated.
Right. Well, some people reported seeing and hearing what we call squibs, right? Little blasts out of the windows.
Right. It should have been even more with that much stuff being squashed down, squeezing out. But there's water tanks located every so many stories about where you saw the squirts coming out. And if you're dustifying the walls of a pressure vessel, like a water tank, at some point it's going to cut loose. That water is going to come out.
So that's what people were seeing when they thought they were seeing little blasts from a controlled demolition, these squibs.
Well, you see something squirting out there, and it very likely could be water squirting out. And it happened about every 10 stories or so where they have water tanks.
So were all of the buildings in the World Trade Center complex, all of them brought down or disappeared, rather, in the same manner?
This last part's like Building 4, the whole main body is gone. You can sweep up what's left. The north wing is still there. It looked like a razor blade sliced it off, but the rest is gone. That was right below Tower 2, and the shopping center below is still intact. Some stuff was knocked off shelves, but there's pictures of the emergency folks walking through there looking for people.
All right, we're heading into the bottom of the hour break here, Dr. Wood. When we come back, I want to talk to you also about Hurricane Erin, which was a Category 3 storm, one of the longest lasting hurricanes, I think, on record, that was approaching Manhattan. And we'll talk about, you know, how that might be connected to what you're talking about, the dustification of the World Trade Center towers. Dr. Judy Wood stays with us. Back with more of Coast right after these. Welcome back. Say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett, S-Y, because I love you, R-E-T-T. In the aftermath of the attacks, Canada activated Operation Yellow Ribbon to handle the diversion of civilian airline flights from the United States to airports in Canada. Of course, Gander, Newfoundland accommodated about 6,600 passengers and crew, and the story inspired the musical Come From Away. All right, astronomers using the European Southern Observatory's Very Large Telescope in Chile have captured the most detailed images yet of a dog bone-shaped asteroid named Cleopatra. New observations provided more accurate estimates for its shape and mass and show the bizarrely formed space rock is approximately 168 miles long. The recent study has also shed light on how Cleopatra's two moons, Alex Helios and Cleo Selene, were formed. You can read more and see some pretty interesting photographs as well in the highlight carousel up at coasttocoastam.com. Back to more of my conversation with Dr. Judy Wood, the author of Where Did the Towers Go? Right here on Coast to Coast AM. And we are back with Dr. Judy D. Wood, former professor of mechanical engineering and the author of Where Did the Towers Go? Evidence of Directed Free Energy Technology on 9/11. So something else interesting happening in and around New York at that time, 9/11, and that was Hurricane Erin, which was a Category 3 storm. What does that have to do with the dustification of these buildings, Judy?
I don't know. It was there, and it seemed kind of unusual that they wouldn't tell us about it. But there's something I would like to point out, that the truth is known about what happened in 9/11, and it is knowable. But there is a great effort out there to cover up what happened. I saw an article, I think it was posted today, where the person is talking about justification, how that happened. And, well, nobody knows, and nobody will talk about it. And then he made this one statement. He said, well, Dr. Judy Wood did pursue this in her book. Her findings were too controversial to be pursued, though.
Too controversial. What does that mean in the world of science? How can it's based in science, how could it be considered controversial?
People like to talk about what's popular rather than the truth. And this is why the truth stays covered up, because there's a lot of people invested into keeping it covered up.
I want to go back.
I think it's quite good. It says, truth can have extraordinary consequences and costs, but it's even more costly if you run from it.
That's an excellent quote. But I do want to go back to Hurricane Erin, because there was some interesting things happening.
The hurricane there, it was unusual. And they didn't talk about it, but it poses other questions, like why didn't they warn people? How could they be 100% sure of the hurricane's behavior so that they wouldn't tell people? Because it pulled up to the Outer Banks of Long Island and stopped. That afternoon, it turned around and headed out of town.
In other words, they didn't issue an evacuation order. How did they know?
Yeah, or even a voluntary evacuation. It just wasn't mentioned. It was mentioned a little bit that the seas were rough that day. But the morning media, 10 minutes to 15 minutes before the first tower got its hole, the main networks weren't talking about it.
So do you have evidence to suggest that perhaps that hurricane was what steered away by the same technology used to dustify these buildings?
No, I'm not going to speculate on that. I'm just making the comment that it implies something, the fact that they were, 100% sure of what the hurricane's behavior was, to the point they didn't tell anybody. Yet they tell us that, nobody knows where hurricanes go. So why wasn't anybody warned that day? It implies that they have a reason for knowing 100% sure that it was going to turn around.
All right, so let's talk about the technology that could turn over a million tons of building material into dust.
Well, I talk mainly about evidence, whether it's parallel evidence or direct evidence of what happened and what could not have happened, what you can rule out. And that's so important, because once you know what happened, then you can figure out the rest much easier. But the fact that it's being covered up is a problem. You know, this organization, 9/11 Truth Movement, they've had my book for over 10 years. So they don't have any excuses. But they still can't count past three. They just talk about three buildings, not the fact that the whole building went away. But this also brings up another issue. I'm sure you've heard of the ash conformity experiment.
No, I haven't.
A simplified version would be if you have a room full of, you know, a bunch of people around a table, and you ask them the answer for 2 plus 2. And this guy says 5, the next one says 5, the next one says 5. Then you get to the test subject, and he says 4, and then looks around like he's going to get in trouble. And pretty soon, after a few more rounds of this, he goes in, joins in, and gives the wrong answer, because he thinks that either they know something he doesn't know, or you know, he wants to just be liked by them.
Right.
And
right.
That can control a whole lot of people in society. It really confuses people, and they just don't know the difference between right and wrong anymore, don't know the difference between truth and false.
Okay, so but when you look at the evidence...
The stress evidence.
Okay, so when you look at the evidence, you see patterns that are consistent with directed energy power. Is that true?
Well, I see a parallel evidence, but if you look at the cover of my book, you see, you know, this big dust fountain where all the dust, all the material is just spreading out into dust. And think about what that could be used for. I mean, that's an amazing amount of energy being released.
Right. Okay. So are we talking about what, force fields?
Well, we see the evidence that something is going on with that material. Something told that material to act differently than it normally does. The energy in that material was instructed to do something differently than it normally does. Instead of the atoms being attracted to each other, they suddenly started repelling each other. Now, that's a pretty amazing piece of technology that can do that. And somebody has it.
Is it related to the work of Tesla?
It could be. John Hutchison has produced, identical phenomenon by using either a Tesla coil or a Van de Graaff generator and interfering with the radio frequency signals. And
right.
We also have a natural version of that that most people are aware of, which is tornadoes. You get levitation, you get, you know, destruction. Some weird destruction with tornadoes.
Right. Yeah, Hutchison was working with huge voltages of power and electricity, rather, and was seeing these, well, he called it the Hutchison effect, these weird effects. Metal would become rubbery.
Yeah.
As you say,
that reminds me of another
levitation
evidence that I was, you know, I'm going to have on the webpage. It's this Bible artifact that was found, it's in the museum in New York, that it looks like a Bible that's embedded in steel and concrete with a formerly liquid piece of metal that ran down the page and then stopped. There's no burn marks on that paper.
This was an artifact found at Ground Zero.
Yep.
No scorch marks on the paper, and yet
right.
You had molten metal running down its page.
Well,
one of the pages.
Solidified metal running down the
right.
Page. And that's some pictures I'd sent in I wanted to have on the webpage. And it's in the whole Bible thing is embedded in steel and concrete. When the Pope came, he came to visit it, and you know, he didn't look at it. He just kind of closed his eyes and said some prayers. But how could anybody look at that and not wonder what the heck's going on?
Right, right.
You know, you had this little river of molten material coming down, or liquid metal that solidified on the page, and there's no burn marks on the paper. Now, that isn't what you see with super-duper thermite.
Right. You've had special interests in things like optical interferometry and photomechanics.
Interference of optics.
Right.
And using to measure deformations of materials.
So these were interests that you had in physics before 9/11, right?
Correct.
So how do they apply then to your study of 9/11?
Well, looking at material properties. For example, there's this guy walking home after the towers have gone poof, and he's wading through dust, and he's kicking it up, and it's staying aloft. But you notice the air is completely clear above his knees. So, you know, just being observant, you realize that dust is so fine, it hangs in the air. Well, then how the heck did it settle out of the air? It implies that it was coarse dust that landed and became fine dust because it kept breaking down.
Right, right.
So
I find it,
you know, learning how to observe things. A lot of people wouldn't have picked up on that, but it's observing material properties.
I just find it's interesting how your academic background almost led you to this.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's a coincidence?
Well, a lot of people have different ideas, like why I'm here.
And what is your idea?
To do this.
Right.
And still, it's not being heard. It's so easy to run a cover-up. And every person participating in the cover-up is a criminal. It's horrible. It's what it's doing to our world. And if folks had figured out, you know, what happened on 9/11, we wouldn't be having this other shenanigans going on now. This is another psyop.
You had a former student who was murdered, I believe. Was that connected to what she revealed in the book, do you think?
Yeah, a student was murdered, but I want to focus on what happened. I don't want, because her student was murdered, then she must be telling the truth. But what I say and the evidence I present stands on its own.
Now, the book came out in 2010, right? Early 2010.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Here we are 11 years later. Has new information surfaced that further reinforces the evidence in your book? You know, could we see another edition, an updated edition at some point?
It's not really, nothing's changed, except it gets covered up more and more. And if somebody posts my name on Facebook, the post gets deleted.
A lot of that going on these days.
Yeah,
a lot of that going on.
Yeah. And, you know, other people, you know, if you mention thermite, you don't get deleted. It's really quite interesting. Now, Richard Gates had hired a guy in Alaska to do a model. I like to point out 9/11, climate change, and COVID, all three of them were run by models of hypothetical situations. And then we have this guy in Alaska running another model to show something about Building 7. But what he said in his final report was quite interesting. If you look at what he really said, it is our conclusion based upon these findings that the collapse of WTC 7 was a global failure involving the near simultaneous failure of all columns in the building, and not a progressive collapse involving the sequential failure of columns throughout the building. Controlled demolition is sequential. So right there, he said it couldn't be that. And if something's dustifying, it's a near simultaneous failure. He also added later, I said, it's the first time I've ever I've seen a failure come down where the concrete was powdered instead of broken chunks.
Remarkable, remarkable. So why?
He's paid to say it was controlled demolition, so he goes with that, which is, that's horrid.
Why are so many married to this idea of nanothermite? I mean, is that even a thing, nanothermite?
In a way, yes. Nano just means it burns faster. It's the same amount of stuff, but the military uses it and should have used it in Afghanistan. Because if they have to clear out, what they do is set out a thermite grenade that burns all the paperwork in their room instantly. That's what it's used for.
So what's next, Dr. Judy? What are you pursuing next?
Well, people don't seem to want to know the truth. They'd rather cover it up.
Well, you're here now with us.
Right. You're getting out some, but others, like for example, David Chandler has had a copy of my book for over 10 years. Yet he likes to claim that it's wrong, but he's never refuted anything in it. Nobody has refuted anything in it.
Well, I'll ask him about it. He's coming on a little bit later in the program.
Yeah.
I can ask him about that.
And Richard Gage wanted to refute it. He couldn't, so he made up some disinformation about it and then refuted his own disinformation. That's what folks do when they're desperate. But why don't they want to know the truth? Why is it so important to them to cover it up?
Is it still possible to get the book? Is it still available?
Yes, still available. You get it on Amazon or on my website, wherethetowersgo.com.
Wherethetowersgo.com. All right. Well, what can we do other than keep, hammering away at this, Judy, and provide a platform for you to talk about it?
And keep reminding people that the truth has consequences, but running from it is far more costly. And the more people that run from it, I think, that's sort of what's been going on. People were scared on 9/11, and they got that fear going. And when people get fear going, they want a relief from the fear. So they do whatever, like go with the flow, like that Ash conformity experiment. They go with the flow, whether it's right or wrong, just to get relief from the disharmony.
2 + 2 = 5.
Then, what's going on now, worldwide, it's scary that people don't think logically anymore.
All right. Well, we'll direct them once again to the website, wherethetowersgo.com. Wherethetowersgo.com. Judy, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for hanging out.
Well, thank you for having me.
My pleasure, Dr. Judy Wood. All right. When we come back, the author of The Most Dangerous Book in the World will be here.